From a transmitter atop Great Blue Hill, this is WGBH, live, local talk, Boston Public Radio.
He is Jim Browdy. I am Marjorie Egan. He's talking to the Olympic man here next to me.
Not you, Jim.
The Olympus man, not the Olympic
That's
man.
Right. We should have the Olympic flourish, actually, to introduce
fine.
You. Anyway, I am Marjorie Egan. He is Jim Browdy. We're listening to Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH.
Hey there, Marjorie.
Hi,
so,
Jim.
Here with us in Studio 3 is someone who used to spend his airtime with us convincing Emily Rooney to take the T.
Indeed.
And after a year and a half, she finally did. Maybe he can do the same with Marjorie Egan in the Summer Olympics.
That's right.
We're talking about the CEO of Boston 2020. For Rich Davey. Rich is here to take our questions and yours at 877-301-8970. Rich, great to see you.
Nice to see you. How are things? All right?
Everything is very good. Well, in case you didn't know, I have been sort of suspicious and cynical about the Olympics coming to Boston.
Suspicious and cynical about anything? I'm shocked.
So maybe you can persuade me. But it has been, despite some rocky starts, there has been a little bit of good news for you guys. I mean, statewide, people are about even about the Olympics coming here.
Yes.
Boston, not so much. A little bit, majority is opposed. But if you're not going to spend any public money, people are in favor of it, in favor of this. So how do we know you're not going to spend any money, and how can we be reassured that you're not going to spend any money?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And again, reiterated today, we're not looking for taxpayer dollars for venues or for games operations. I think, you know, we're working on our plans, and we hope to put some more specificity behind what we've been saying in the next couple of months. And I think that will show folks and give them a real sense of calm that we can run these games with privately financed.
You know, one thing, though, that would make – I mean, we had – as everybody knows, a terrible winter and the T shutting down. I want to ask you later about the MBTA because you used to run the MBTA.
Yes.
But one of the things I think people like me would say, well, okay, if I knew that this Olympics – I mean, the last time you were here, and maybe this has changed, but I think you told me that basically all that was going to happen with the Olympics – and the T was a few new red line trains and a few new orange line trains, which is something, but really kind of a drop in the bucket. If I thought that the Olympics was going to really dramatically improve the MBTA, I'd feel a lot differently about the Olympics. And I think I'm not alone.
No, I don't think you're alone, Marjorie. And I think, you know, I've been trying to be careful. Do we need a lot to do the Olympics? We don't. What's already on the table, we can have the Olympics. But can the Olympics be that kind of a catalyst to make the kind of change you're talking about? Absolutely. And I think Governor Baker, I think on your show a couple of weeks ago, said the same, that, you know, he would be favorable, as is the mayor, if we can find some transportation dollars to invest that helps the Olympics, but more importantly, can help the state and the city. That's great. We're supportive of that, too. What those are, I think we have to have a conversation. It's not up to Boston 2024, I think, to say we should do this. I think it's a broader conversation with elected officials to say here are some things that we could do that, again, might help the Olympics, but more importantly, help the T and help the city of Boston.
That's the voice of Rich Davey. He is the CEO of Boston 2024. He's going to be with us for about a half hour to take your questions and ours. You can call him at 877-301-8970. Rich, back to the whole no public money commitment that you and John Fish and everybody made from day one. Last week we asked, or whenever Charlie Baker was here, you mentioned, we said, would he vote for a ballot question that said no public money other than for infrastructure? He said yes. Marty Walsh, after being asked a couple times last Friday, said the same thing. Evan Falchuk, a former third-party candidate for governor, has already filed a tentative question with the Attorney General's office. What's the status of the committee, your committee's pursuit of a ballot question, which you finally said you would do, a month ago or something? Where's that going?
Yeah, so we're still thinking about what the question would look like, Jim, in the process. I mean, as you know, maybe some of your listeners don't, there are a few ways to get a question on the ballot. You can either seek signatures from citizens, or actually the legislature could propose language and have the governor sign it. So we're still sort of working through the mechanics of the
process. Wait, you sign it, meaning it'd be a law?
No, signed to put actually something on the
– And is that binding?
Yes. If you put something on the state ballot and you devise it as such, it could become law. But the question, though, could be devised by the legislature as well as through citizen petition.
But even though you're still working on the language of the question or whatever you said a second ago, it will – say what you and John Fish and others have been saying since the beginning, that there shall be no public money other than that which is already appropriated for transportation infrastructure, plus whatever, federal security money. But it will say those things.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's the likely scenario. Obviously, again, it depends on who we're working with on the question. But
have you met with Falchuk?
I have not met with
him. Have any of your people met with Falchuk?
So Evan, I know, did speak to John Fish, but not recently. But we have met with the folks at No Boston Olympics, for example, to get their advice and their thinking about what the kind of question might be. So we are reaching out to folks who, you know, I think can help us shape the best question possible. So there's clear, you know, real clarity, if you will, from the voters and from about how we should proceed.
You know, one last thing on that, and then we'll start some calls at 877-301-8970. The other day, I tweeted out that Walsh, that Baker, and that Bob DeLeo, the Speaker of the House, had all said to me, either here or on television at Greater Boston, that they would vote for such a question. And Evan Falchuk tweeted in response, well, if they all agree, why doesn't the legislature just do it? Why do we have to go through the process, a year and a half, a lot of money. Why doesn't the legislature just pass that law? Would you support that if DeLeo and Rosenberg were to file such a thing?
Well, obviously, it's, you know, the legislature is the body that started this to begin with. I mean, they created the task force that looked at whether the Olympics would be feasible.
With former Mayor Donahue of Lowell, who's now the senator from there, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, you know, the legislature has already taken a leadership role in this regard. I mean, if that's what the legislature wishes to do, then, you know, so be it.
But you'd support it.
Obviously, depending on what the language is, we've been clear about what we need, security dollars and transportation, but not for venues and for operations. Absolutely.
I was just going to say, before we get to the calls, Rich Davey, you know, one of the things that bothers me is that this idea, I mean, it's great that, you know, you've got Larry Bird on board now and David Ortiz and JoJo White and Larry Lucchino runs the Red Sox, you know, very impressive people. Mm-hmm. But it kind of adds to me to this sort of all the good boys and all the, you know, the Celtics, and this is like this big jamboree of all these powerful people that are going to basically going to try to convince me.
There was
to
no
do...
music at our board meeting, I can assure you.
Okay.
There was no jamboree.
That they're going to try to convince me to do what I think we shouldn't do, and I'm also looking for like the Olympic expert in the bunch who really knows the Olympics. So why shouldn't I think I'm just going to get talked into something here?
Well, so you mentioned four of the 30 board members that we have. We've got civic leaders and folks here in Boston who have been around a long time, folks like Carol Fulp and Bob Reynolds over at Putnam. And then we've got USOC expertise, including Dan Doktoroff, who was the...
Is he the New York guy?
He was a New York guy who not only ran Bloomberg, but also worked on New York's what was unsuccessful bid for the Olympics for 2012, but actually really has spawned a whole host of development and redevelopment in New York. So we've got a broad-based group of folks. So obviously Larry was on the 92 Dream Team, and David is, I think, would love to see the Dominican Republic compete for the gold medal in 2024 at Fenway Park. But we have a broad number of folks, athletes and business folks and others. And actually we'll be coming out with another round of board announcements, probably in the next few weeks as well.
So the person that you mentioned that did New York, he's an Olympic expert.
Yes.
Who else?
Obviously, you've got the United States Olympic Committee folks, everyone from Larry Probst and Scott Blackman to Angela Ruggiero and Anita DeFrance, who are IOC members, actually. So you've got folks who have international Olympic experience, U.S. Olympic experience, on our board, and, you know, folks like Dan Dark. I mean, obviously, Boston has never done this before, ever. And so balancing – so really there's nobody in Boston that has, quote, Olympic experience, which is why we've had to broaden our reach outside. And we've got staff as well, Doug Arnott, who is an Olympic Games expert, actually a Charlestown guy, but's traveled all over the world the last few decades working on Olympics. He's working with us as well on our venue plan.
What's the New York City guy's name again?
Dan Doktoroff.
By the way, he's the one who Shirley Leung wrote about and said that he thought they won by losing.
Yeah.
Meaning that even though they lost the bid, that there were a ton of things, as you intimated, that had, for example, I think he said there hadn't been any new T construction or something like that in 50 years in New York City. And because of the Olympic exploration process, you're worried about T stuff. The process alone, according to this character, spurred that.
That's
one last
I
thing.
Am Jim.
What?
Win by losing.
One last.
We could win by winning, too, though. Shin up.
Hey, you know, Marjorie just threw Larry Lucchino into that pile, which I think is a little bit premature. Mm-hmm. Globe wrote a story saying that Larry Lucchino, obviously, is he the president of the Red Sox? I guess whatever he is, big shot of the Red Sox.
Sure.
He had spoken to John Fish. He spoke to Marty Walsh. What's happening? Is he coming? And if he does come, is he replacing you? Is he your boss? Is he working with you? What is he?
Yeah, well, I mean, Larry first would be, if he comes over, would be a great addition, obviously. He worked, he's done some tremendous work with the Red Sox. Folks, I don't think, realize he also has a track record in San Diego with the Padres and obviously with the Orioles as well.
There was a ballot question out there in San Diego, too, wasn't there, that he had to deal with?
I
believe
on
construction. On
the construction
of the
stadium, which passed. Obviously, that's not something that we're interested in. But he gets sports, he gets public process. He'd be a great addition. Unclear. Obviously, he's got a full-time job with the Red Sox right now. I think we would love to have as much of his time as we can, but we're sensitive to the fact that he's got a full-time job as well with the Red Sox.
So, what has Fish offered him?
You know, I know there have been conversations. I don't know what the details of those conversations.
Yes,
I actually don't.
I do not.
Wait
a second. You're the CEO, and you don't know what John Fish offered Larry Lucchino organization?
As I said, Jim, there's been, you know, been conversations. I know that. I can confirm, but the details of which I'm not going to talk about. But again, Larry would be a great addition if we could get him, for sure.
Okay, let's take some calls.
The number is 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. We're talking, obviously, about the Olympics. Let's start with Rachel in Medfield. Hi, Rachel.
Hello, Rachel. Hi, Rachel. You're on with Rich Davey from the Boston 2024. Hello there.
Hi. Yeah. I had a question for you. I was wondering, I just wanted to know more about what Boston 2024 is planning to leave behind as a legacy.
Sure. And I think you've raised a good point. And the legacy question is, what can we leave behind as a community? So a few things that we've talked about, everything from potentially leaving a pool behind for the community at Franklin Park. We've talked about the idea that Wedette Circle, which is where the temporary stadium would be, could become a new neighborhood here in Boston. The Athlete Village, we've talked about potentially losing some of those beds to be dorms with UMass Boston's as UMass converts to more of a residential school. And then a legacy fund. You know, the last three Olympics in the United States turned a profit. And L.A. in particular was able to leave behind a legacy fund that has invested still today, 31 years later, in youth sports. So I think there's a lot of opportunity for us to think about that. And look, as Marjorie said, too, are there ways to see a transportation legacy as well? I think we're very open to that conversation as
Rachel,
well.
Rachel, thank you very much for the call. Rich Davey, every time – well, it's not fair. Most times.
Did you just admit you were not fair?
I wasn't not fair yet.
I'm the one that's not fair.
I was about to be unfair, but I actually pulled it back in.
Thank you.
Oftentimes, this is fair, when there's criticism of a particular site that is either leaked to the Globe or given, the response from you and others, your colleagues, is, well, nothing is final yet. We're exploring these kinds of things. When will it be final? When can the people of Boston and, let's say, well, not just Eastern Massachusetts, Holyoke wants volleyball. So when will the people of Massachusetts know here is where Boston 2024 intends to put volleyball, it's called the velodrome, whatever it is. When does that stuff get finalized so people can actually weigh in on something that's hard and fast?
Well, I think – so two points there.
That was fair, right?
That was a fair question.
Thank you very
absolutely
much.
And so I want to say that the finalization we're still years away from. This is like wet concrete, I guess, right now, and it's hardening over time. We'll come out with a new set of suggested venues probably this summer. You know, we've taken a lot of feedback, to your point, some folks concerned or even critical. Others, like, for example, New Bedford has said, hey, have sailing down here, don't use Boston Harbor. And so we're looking at and we're taking all of the input we're getting from our public meetings and from elected officials about possible venues, and we're investigating all those. It's actually a little more complicated than just saying, oh, yes, we can do this venue here. You need to know about crowd control and traffic and the playing conditions and get the sports federations on board. But we are taking a lot of public feedback right now. I would say by sometime this summer, we'll have a detailed plan for folks to be able to then further comment on to us.
Let's go back to the calls. Kerry, you were in Charlestown. You were on with Rich Davey, CEO of Boston 2024. Hey, Kerry.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
I'm definitely a pro-Olympic fan.
Great.
Being from Charlestown, Jack O'Callaghan bringing the gold home was very prideful in him. But my question is, after 2024 is over, how do you see the economical opportunities for small business and new businesses? Like, are you going to clear those areas up and pave the way for new opportunities for housing and commercial businesses, which would bring like the people together?
Sure. No, it's a great question. There was an independent report done by the Boston Foundation, which showed that leading up to the games, you'd have tens of thousands of jobs created and something like $8 or $9 billion of economic activity in Boston. And that's not only construction jobs, but that's small businesses as well. London, and tourism is an important point as well, particularly for Boston. London saw, after they hosted the 2012 games, they became the most visited city in the world in 2013. They actually beat Paris for the first time since like 1480 or something. I'm joking. But you see a real uptick in tourism as well, and that is a lot for small businesses. So we're looking at a plan as well right now. We're drafting that if we are lucky enough to win the games, how can we make sure that small businesses and women and minority-owned businesses as well can see a boost from what we expect for the significant spending to occur.
Kerry, thanks. You know, speaking of London, one of the great fun interviews we have done probably in our 2.5 years here, you know who I'm about to say, Boris Johnson, the mayor of London, soon to be a member of parliament next month and maybe prime minister.
He was here with us too.
His original budget for the non-infrastructure stuff was exactly what yours is, somewhere in the $4 billion range.
Right.
And he said to us, once they started fleshing it out, that budget tripled. Most people think it quadrupled, but let's say just tripled. Even if you are operating, as we assume you are, in as much good faith as you possibly can be, why should, and so was he, why should one not assume that what happened in London, where he assumed, what the organizers thought $4 billion was the number, and again, it was four or five or something, that and became 15 or 16, why isn't that going to happen here?
Well, I think because Boris and others made choices, right? So it wasn't overruns that drove that budget. They made choices about investment. As you know, they... the Londoners in the UK decided to do a big project called Crossrail, which is equivalent probably to our North-South Rail Link here in Boston. But they made that choice, Jim. And then they made some other decisions as well. They, too, had a temporary stadium that they wanted to build in London. After they set the budget up, they decided to make it a permanent stadium and a permanent home to a soccer club in London, and that drove the cost.
So none of that growth was in the cost was overruns.
The vast majority were decisions that they made. So that's why it's important for us to nail down what our decisions are. You know, if someone decided that a permanent stadium was better than a temporary stadium, that's going to drive our costs up. So we're not looking at that. It's actually cheaper to build. It's like almost like Legos. It's cheaper to build a temporary stadium and take it down as opposed to a permanent stadium. So
there's a Legos thing in Assembly Square. Speaking of there, Legos,
and perhaps if we started now, we could actually build a Lego stadium.
I like that. So
that I think that's the point there. I mean, look, there have been other nations that have made other choices, white elephants and whatnot, but London made choices to invest in themselves. And I think that's, you know, as you know, Boris is by sort of a U.S. electoral politics, actually pretty conservative guy.
Oh, yes, he is.
But he had says, you know, again and again, if they had to do the Olympics again in London, he would do it in a minute.
You're listening to Rich Davey, the CEO of Boston 24. We're taking your questions and our questions. We're going to keep talking to Rich for a little bit longer. Our conversation continues on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. If you're just tuning in, we're being joined by Rich Davey. This will be a monthly appearance. He's the CEO of Boston 2024. Marjorie and he were just wrestling on the floor, which is totally, really inappropriate, Marjorie, if I may say.
It is an Olympic sport, though, so but it's totally appropriate.
If you want to speak to Rich, who's here for another 10 minutes or so, our number's 877-301-8970. Some emails. Yes, Marjorie?
Here's an email from Andrea, who's not, I don't think, based on her email, an Olympic fan.
That's okay.
She wants to know about the mismanagement of the T funds and how this isn't a problem since you were in charge of the T and you were transportation secretary. People don't know the report. I mean, I think a lot of us knew that the T was falling apart and rusting and in terrible, terrible shape and old cars, et cetera. I didn't know that the average T worker was between vacation and family leave and sick time, personal time, up to like 12 weeks off a year, or that the fixing the T was astronomically expensive because of the union rules and all that kind of thing. So she's basically saying, I guess, why should we trust you, Rich Davey, because you ran the T? And did you know that people were taking 12 weeks off a year?
I certainly knew that FMLA was a Family Medical Leave Act was a problem. And, you know, like everything at the MBTA, and if anyone says to you that, hey, reform is all set, we've solved our problems, they'd be just lying to you. And I never said we solved every problem. We certainly didn't. But FMLA was a challenge. There are a lot of union rules, as you mentioned, Marjorie. I think There was a story today in the Herald which talked about a number of the roadblocks that have been put up. I know the T put out, when I was secretary, a number of rules to try to crack down on that, but it's really hard. The union rules are such that, you know, if management, if there's a disagreement, you have to go to binding arbitration. The binding arbitrations, I mean, I fired a dozen MBTA employees, I think, in my first week as general manager 5 years ago for what was cooking the books on safety records for bus maintenance. And over the time, nine were reinstated by an arbitrator. So, you know, you put up the good fight, but the process sometimes does not allow for you, I think, to get to the right result.
But one last thing on this. So I think if people realize this, mm-hmm. it might have had much – I mean, if maybe politically you couldn't say these kinds of things, but if people realized, you know, the mm-hmm. the abuse of the vacation, the abuse of the family leave, the abuse in other areas, and it was in the front page of the papers and on the nightly news every night, there would have been a public reaction, I think.
I think people certainly know that are in the transportation know in leadership that this is a challenge. I don't shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. I mean, look, there are a number of folks at the T who take family medical leave, and it's appropriate, right? So we shouldn't assume that everybody taking family medical leave is somehow doing something that's inappropriate. You know, it's a changing workforce there as well. A lot of single parents, for example, a lot of folks who are taking care of their elderly parents. These are all appropriate ways that people can get time off. And a lot of the employees at the T are also part-time as well. Actually, a lot of the bus drivers and others are part-time. So they don't have the kind of sick time benefits that others enjoy. With that said, there's definitely, you know, that this administration, like we try to, has to continue to crack down on that. But look, I'm also the guy that got rid of toll collectors, and I'm also the guy that got rid of two red line and two orange line drivers. So we were able to implement a lot of reforms during my time. But you always have to be continuing reform. There's no doubt about it.
That's the voice of Rich Davey. He's the CEO of Boston 2024. John from Gardner, you're on with Rich right now. Hey, John.
Marjorie, for once, I'm going to be brief. Rich, I feel like I've got to know you a little bit. And I think of you as an able, competent manager.
Thank
Not
you.
Perfect, but, you know.
No one is.
Some critics in some corners lump you in with the so-called political hacks, and whether you agree with that, you know, characterization
sure.
of other people, why are you
yeah,
not
he
a
thinks it's great,
hack?
By the way. He says, yes, I'm sorry, go ahead. Go ahead, John, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
Why are you not one of those, and sure. why are you the right guy doing what you do? And I'll hang up and hear your answer.
Thanks, John.
No, an honest question, John. I appreciate that. I'll give you an honest answer. First of all, I'm proud of my 5 years in state government. I was so thinking that I was going to go back into state government. I actually withdrew my pension contributions that I made as an employee. I probably won't go back. It was a great 5 years, but I have more private sector experience than I have public. But more importantly, you know, why am I the right guy? First of all, it's a team. I mean, John Fish, we've got a board. This is a group of folks that are going to deliver these games, we hope, to Boston. In terms of the competency of delivering projects, you know, we shut down the Callahan Tunnel, which I was told would be a disaster and it would be a fireable offense. And we got it done on time and on budget and done really well. There are a number of other projects that I'm proud of at DOT and at the T that were done on time and on budget because of decisions that we've made. So and transportation is going to be a big part of what we look at for 2024. You know, I'm not an Olympic expert. There's no doubt about that. But I know my way around transportation and construction operations. And if we're fortunate enough to win the games, again, with the team that's around us at Boston 2024, I think we've got the right group of people to deliver this on time, on budget, and and more importantly, for the good of Massachusetts and Boston. And with that, though, we need to have checks and balances. You know, the mayor and the governor are going to be fully informed and have to – the mayor actually has to sign off ultimately in our bid. And so making sure that, you know, we've got checks and balances in place are going to be important, whether I lead the effort or, you know, 5-6 years from now, there's somebody new. So that's going to be an important piece going
Rich,
forward.
Rich, speaking of your team, and you and Marjorie were talking about transparency a couple of minutes ago at the T, you hired a very competent firm, Weber Shandwick, recently to deal with some Olympic issues, that obviously Olympic issues, but they have some expertise in that area. Unlike when the mayor had urged you to disclose all the salaries and consulting fees, you guys didn't do it in this instance. What's the justification for not disclosing this to the public while you did disclose all the other information months ago.
So we don't have a signed contract with Weber. That did not come through the article. I think, you know, some folks at the Globe were frustrated by that, but we don't have a signed contract with them. We have a lot of firms and folks who are doing services for us at discount or pro bono. Right now, we don't have a signed contract with Weber. But going
forward, why does that make a difference? You're paying them, right?
No, we're not paying them right now.
Oh, you're not.
But going forward, if we pay them or if we pay anybody else, we need to come up with a process, Jim, where it's clear that on a regular basis we're disclosing information. We can't be in a place that every time a reporter decides they want to know how much I paid for a donut this morning that we're just constantly reporting. So we're working on a protocol right now. Where we would report on a regular basis what we're doing around fundraising, what we're doing.
But in the aggregate, will we ever know, for just taking Weber Shandwick because they're the ones in this, will we ever know, even if there's a contract, what you're paying Weber Shandwick?
Absolutely. Because
them in particular.
Well, it depends. So when I say depends is part of all nonprofits, and by the way, again, this is a privately funded effort. On our disclosure requirements to both the IRS and to the AG on an annual basis, one of the things we'll have to disclose in that process is the top five contractors that we paid and what we paid them. And so that will at some point – so if Weber is among the top five, that information will come out next May.
But you don't intend to do another disgorgement, I guess, like happened. Yeah. Is that correct?
I mean, look, I think that it just becomes unwieldy. We want to balance transparency with getting the right information out on a regular basis. And again, you know, I think what you're going to see from us is something that goes well beyond what the law requires, but still obviously complying with the law vis-a-vis our IRS requirements and our Attorney General filing requirements.
Rich Davies, Steve from Plum Island has just emailed. He says he fears that Boston cost overruns mean there will be no money for Beyond Boston projects. He wants to know what projects are in the pipeline that are not in Boston. Will the commuter rail be fixed as well?
So a lot of questions there. I think what I can tell you is the projects that we have said that the Olympics really need are already in the pipeline. And some have actually been completed. And the question, though, I'm totally with you, Steve, that the Olympics can't serve as a way to siphon off dollars from other important projects around Massachusetts. And so I know that's something that I've heard when I've been out in places like Worcester and Springfield, and that's not what we're looking for at all. The answer to that is, you know, again, transparency. I know when I was MassDOT secretary, we put out the first detailed capital plan, which showed all of the projects that were expected to be worked on over a five-year period. And so the public and elected leaders can see if something drops off. So I think that's another way that, you know, you have comfort to see that projects aren't being changed for any reason, whether it be the Olympics or something else.
You know, Rich, there was a story in the Wall Street Journal a couple of weeks ago about the alleged nervousness of the USOC leadership with the status of public support.
Sure.
There were reporting unsourced that San Francisco and Los Angeles, which had been bidders, were being approached again. Leaders there denied. Has the USOC at any time indicated to you guys that they may just pull this thing because they're not happy with the progress you've been making with the public?
No, I think they are happy with the progress. Certainly, we all want the polling data to be a little better. But as Marjorie said, we've made progress over the last few weeks and months. And if it's, again, we hammer home our message, which is we are not looking for taxpayer dollars, the growth, you know, you're at 60% support. So I think folks realize that. And then, you know, we were happy, as I mentioned earlier, you know, seven members of the United States Olympic Committee board have joined our board. And so I think that shows you their confidence in Boston going forward. They've had boots in the ground helping us. You know, the Olympic experts that Marjorie asked a little bit about, they've provided that. So, no, it's been a great partnership, and they're in it to win it.
How about, you know, overtime for Boston cops? How is that not going to come out of Boston funds?
Yeah, so the security budget that we will work with the federal government, Marjorie, will work on funding the security necessary for the games. And so there's a process in place, but we're going to be asking for a significant amount of dollars, which will include for Boston or other municipalities, police that are required for the Olympics. That'll be reimbursed by the federal government.
So the so-called details would be included in your request from the federal government?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it'll be details or if it would actually be straight shift. I mean, that level of detail. But for those incremental costs that are required beyond what is normal for Boston police or state police or others, there's a process in place to get reimbursement from the federal government.
Okay, Rich. Rich Davey, before you go, the question on everybody's mind is, what is the strategy of Boston 2024 to turn Marjorie Egan around? I mean, I'm assuming that yes. you're meeting with all these big – Larry
he
Bird
should,
is probably part – she's a huge Larry
come,
Bird
he can
fan.
Come more often. He can come more often.
Well, he's coming, he's once,
coming
a
once a month.
Month.
That's
they missed
right.
one appearance. He's coming once a
yeah.
month.
I should so tell everybody we were wrestling. Now she has archery. She's got a bow and arrow aimed at me right now.
If I were you, I'd be working on that plan.
Yeah.
So hire some firm or something and let them work on that.
Well, we are working on the plan. I mean, it's very complicated. I think, you know, at the end of the day, and maybe too, I was a little surprised when I walked in, and I've been in this town long enough. I think people are just generally suspicious. Oh, you must have all this cooked and you're just waiting for the right time to release it. It's actually not true. We won because we sold a vision. You know, the team sold a vision, and now it's incumbent upon us to get into the details. What does it exactly mean, a temporary stadium at Wedette Circle? And what does it exactly mean for dormitories at UMass and sailing in maybe New Bedford? And so all of that, it is very complicated, but I can assure you that by this summer, we will have more detailed plans for folks to look at. But we sold a vision. We wanted a vision. The USOC didn't select us because they knew exactly, you know, how many seats were going to be put in South Boston and exactly, you know, how people were going to get to boxing up in Lowell. So it's now incumbent upon us to put details around that vision.
I hear you. And that big plan is great. A little yeah. note from David Ortiz saying,
please.
I love your radio show, Marjorie. Uh-huh. Just, trust me, I've known this woman a long
no,
time.
It's just I've, maybe I've
you
lived
want
a little
big
bit.
Poppy hug?
Yeah.
I don't know if I can deliver that.
Yeah.
Rich,
but you know
what
it
do.
Is? Rich, I've lived around here a little bit longer than you and seen a lot
just
of
a
promises not kept, and it makes me suspicious.
But a promise that is going to be kept is Rich Davey is going to be here monthly to answer
indeed.
Our questions and yours. Rich, it's a pleasure to see you. Thanks
thank
so much
you
for
always.
Coming
thank
in.
You very
next
much, Rich Davey. He is the CEO of Boston 2024. He's got a nice little bracelet on that says that. A little.
Do you want it?
now
sure.
you're getting
hey,
it.
Hey, I
Rich.
Could be cheaply. I could be cheaply bought, Rich Davey. Thank you very much for coming
good to
in.
See you, Rich.
And coming up, the Schoolhouse Rocked Holyoke Schools have been put in receivership, and a new principal takes over at Madison Park High. Paul Revel joins us next on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.